Blog Talk Radio.
Life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all your needs. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes, so write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out loud. Own who you are, stand up proud. You gotta find what works for you. Find a balance that lets you be you.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. This is episode number 330. And it's a pretty good night here in Lexington, Kentucky. And tonight, I am going solo tonight. Daniel, unfortunately, has a phone that is out of function, so he can literally not call. And then, unfortunately, I do have to pass along the news that this morning, Holly's father passed away. So, obviously, she's not going to be on the show tonight. He was in hospice, and but he passed away this morning at the nursing home, and obviously Holly will not be here tonight, and definitely if you know her, she definitely would she'd appreciate a note from you, but hopefully she will be able to come back. I'm certainly not going to pressure or anything, but hopefully she will be back next week. We've got some great guests coming up the next few weeks, but tonight we're just going to go ahead and do an open lines night, which we'll get into shortly, and then also we are going to give you some updates on the 10th anniversary. That's right, 10th anniversary of Imaginarium, and that is coming, of course, next summer. So that is some good news, and hopefully that'll be some stuff to get you excited. And certainly I'm ready to roll on all fronts with getting prepared, getting the ball rolling. And but we'll go ahead and I'll go ahead and recognize the two parties that brought you tonight's show. We'll go ahead and do that right here at the outset so that I can open up the call lines a little early. And tonight, the show is brought to you by Sandy Lender, the Genre Blender, and also by Per Bostet Publications. What a great tandem, Sandy Lender and Per Bostet. So first, we're going to give you a little bit from Sandy with her new spot, and then we're going to go over and give you a little bit of info about Per Bostet. And thank you to both for bringing you tonight's episode. So first, here's Sandy.
The latest release from author Sandy Lender is book 3 of the Fairy Holiday series titled I Know What Your Vampire Did Last Summer. It's a standalone story in the series, but it's got all the fun, humor, horror, and sweet paranormal romance you'd expect of a Lender Blender vampire satire. Come on down to the Naples Hideaway and Marina for a fun and romancy vacay, but watch out for the Grendwolves and the random femme fatale who's thinks she's competing for your vampire's attention. Pick up I Know What Your Vampire Did Last Summer by Sandy Lender today.
I love that line. Lender, blender, vampire satire. I love it. I started to crack up when I was repeating that. Love that. But thank you so much, Sandy. And definitely, folks, pick that book up because everything Sandy has out is definitely worth reading. And so now we're going to take you over to a little bit about Per Bostet. Per Bostet Publications is a small press based in the Louisville metro area, specializing in speculative fiction and other outside-the-box books. With 40 titles in print and ebook formats and a handful of audiobooks, Per Bostet offers a little bit of everything. Follow the investigations of Private Eye, David Blaze, and M.B. Dabney's An Untidy Affair, a historical mystery set during the 1985 police bombing of the Move House in Philadelphia. Or join the psychic private investigator Alan Rodriguez in New Mexico in A Handful of Dirt by Janie Franz as he tries to clear an elderly man wrongfully accused of murder. You can find these titles and more at PerBostettPublications.com, at Amazon, or you can find the press in person at regional events such as Prime Crime in Indianapolis in October. PerBostett Publications, where timeless tales unfold. Thank you to T. Lee Harris, Marion Allen, and Sarah Marion, and again, of course, to Sandy Lender for bringing us tonight's show. So definitely going to come back over here to the chat room. It is open tonight, so please do join in. And, thank you. I will pass, Sandy, I'll pass your note, and Tommy, I'll pass that along to Holly when I speak with her later, for sure. Thank you very much. And the first, I will go ahead, I guess, and give some of the good info on Imaginarium 2023, which is, again, our 10th anniversary. We will be returning to the Holiday Inn Louisville East, and love that place. And so, yeah, we are going back there. Room block will be open within just a few weeks, and definitely don't want to wait on getting your reservations because it did sell out entirely last year. And it is July 14th through 16th. So July 14 to 16 of 2023 is when the big event occurs. And we want to make this one just literally, well, not literally, but you know what I mean when I say blow the roof off. We want to have a really major 10th anniversary. We're definitely working on some big-name guests as we speak. Hopefully we're going to have announcements coming very soon on that front. But we do have a lot of things open. Of course, I did mention last week that we do have the call for entries open for the film festival, for screenplays, and then also for all the various visual categories at filmfreeway.com, and that's where our platform is for film submissions, and also at the International Screenwriters Association. So that is open. We also opened up guest applications. So if you are a writer or creative of any genre and you would like to participate as a host of workshops, do panels, all that kind of fun stuff, we do have our guest applications open as I speak, and definitely go over to enterTheImaginarium.com to find that. But we do also have a couple of bits of news that opened today, and that is that we do have the early bird discount window, both for expo space, and that includes the main expo hall and Creative Alley, which ended up being very popular this past year. And we also have our event tickets early discounts. So the early discounts also extend to extra vendor badges. So if you want to get expo space and get a couple extra vendor badges, all that stuff is discounted right now on the site. And then we also have the event tickets are discounted. This window is only open until September 24th, so don't wait. And with the vendor space, last year we sold out completely. All spaces for Creative Alley and the Expo Hall were sold out. So if you're wanting to become a vendor, definitely take advantage of the savings. And also make sure you get a space by getting in early. And, of course, the event tickets, you can save some money right now. So we like to do that for people that come regularly every year. We like to give you a chance to get in a little cheaper. And, of course, in this nice inflationary period, you know, the cost of the hotels keep rising. So, yeah, we have to deal with that, too. We'd like to be able to do even more. But, yes, it's expensive and getting more expensive to do these things. So, but, yes, we still want to be able to pass on savings. And so that is there waiting for you. And so enjoy that. Take advantage of that and get set because it's going to be a really fun year. And I know that Holly is working up some really cool programming things that are going to be added in this year. And we've got some unique entertainment that we also are going to be bringing in for this special year and a whole lot of other things. So be ready for announcements and all kinds of updates. But yes, we are open for early discounts, as I said, on the Expo Hall and then all Creative Alley, and then also for event tickets. And then definitely, you know, if you want to do panels and workshops as a participating creative or writer, you want to go to find the guest applications on the site. And then filmmakers, yes, we do have a page on our website that'll take you through direct links to either Film Freeway or the International Screenwriters Association. So Yes, all stuff is underway. So, yeah, the ball is rolling. So let's see here. We're going to be opening up. We'll go ahead and open up the lines if you'd like to call in. Tonight is going to be kind of a fun and laid-back just chat. So I definitely would love to talk with a few of you tonight. The guest call-in line is 619-639-4616. Again, it's 619-639-4616. And that number is on the show page where you go in to sign into the chat room and listen. So you can see the call-in number there. So it's just me tonight hosting. So, yeah, I do hope some folks call in to chat. Looks like Clayton is in there. And, yes, you may have logged in just after I said it. But, yeah, the hotel block will be opening up. It's September. We should be having that open in just a couple of weeks, and so I'm looking forward to that because, because last year that was crazy. We sold out the entire hotel, so it'd be kind of fun to see a big burst right at the out of the gate for folks getting set up for that. So it's going to be a lot of fun, and yeah, Clayton, get your guest app in as well, and Sorry to hear you've been ill. I definitely hope you're feeling better because you were on a roll writing wise from the things I've seen from you. You just like have been a machine. With your machine civilization, little pun there, but yeah, you've been like a machine lately. Congrats on that. And don't you get sick on us, Clayton? Because we've also got, and I'll mention this too. We do have Imaginarium's first anthology, which will be coming out toward the holiday season. And, of course, that's with editor Sandy Lender and comes right out of a special workshop at Imaginarium 2022. And I'm very excited about that release. It's the first ever actual publication by, affiliated with Imaginarium. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And it looks like we do have a caller. So at least I'm going to have some company tonight. And I'm thinking I know who this might be, but I'm not going to assume just in case. Yes, on caller line one, you are live on the Star Chamber show.
Steven, hello, everyone.
Tommy, all right, I thought that was you. But, the first time that I'll assume it's you and then I'll, welcome you, it'll be like somebody from, like, Alaska or something. You never know.
I'll bring someone, a random person over, and I'll call. And then once you assume it's me, I'll put the random person on.
Yeah. That would be awesome.
That'll be interesting.
I'll just sit by
and listen. Everything falls apart.
But it's good to talk with you. And I want to let you know that there is a Fates warning. I just want to tell you while we're live on the air, there is a new Fates warning biography that came out this year. It looks really nice, and I don't know if you're aware of it. I think it's called Destination Onward, I think is the name of the book, but I just saw it talked about on a YouTube show, and I thought of you immediately. I was like, next time I talk to Tommy, I've got it locked in my head. I got to tell him about this book because I know you're a Fates Warning fan, so I've carried out my mission.
I did see that was released. I would like to have that. I think that's probably going to make for a lot of interesting reading. Yes, I followed the band, enjoyed the music for many years, going all the way back to when, I had to actually get their music through sort of underground means and ordering music and the like before we had really level of accessibility that we do today. I'm definitely going to see that once I can get a hold of a copy of it. I've got so many books at the moment. Been doing a few events.
Yes, you do.
So,
you've
been
on the warpath. And I've noticed. I wanted to give you a chance to get us up to date on KillerCon because that's a convention that we've not heard a lot about on the show, and that might be a neat one to give people a review on because it turned out very well from what I understand from your posts and. You had a great experience, and so tell us about KillerCon, and you sold out evidently at that event, so you did good.
Oh yes, it was an interesting trip just to start with because I was driving late and I pulled off at some random stop, and 2:30 in the morning, I'm hearing shouts of get on the ground. Now, there are police cars outside. Now, thankfully, they were not looking at me when they said that. There was some sort of an altercation outside. That there was some sort of a random little, I don't know what it was really. But so I've been up since 2:30 that morning. So some time later, I got up and completed my drive down to Austin or Round Rock, Texas, and where KillerCon was to be held. And extreme horror splatterpunk is prevalent there. They do the Splatterpunk Awards. So I got to see all of that, and I'm not primarily, of course, I'm not really a splatterpunk author, but I am a horror author. And there are extreme moments. So I've gone a couple of times before, but it was good to see everyone out there. A lot of the, of course, you know, Bridget Nelson, and she's got her collection, the Bouquet of Viscera, out, which is extreme horror, so she fits right in there. And of course, Jeff Strand, Lynn Hansen, and everyone.
That's
and there were a lot of others I met whom I didn't know yet before. Douglas Ford. Others, Nicholas Robinson, and quite a few others I got to banter with while I was up there. It was a good time. A lot of good discussions. There were a lot of panels that were informative. Of course, Maurice brought us was, you know, he's been at Imaginarium at least.
Mm-hmm.
I know he's been at least once, if not more than that.
He's been there multiple times. He was featured as an Imaginator 1 year. So yeah, absolutely.
But I was good to chat with him, and I actually caught a reading of his, very powerful reading of his, and I had to tell them about that afterward. But it was intense. Also John Skip, I caught his reading, and that was informative and interesting. And he's an interesting fellow to talk to as well. You know, he's been in the business, Yeah, he's got a big track record and a lot to talk about. For the first time, which I've seen it performed, but I've never participated in the Gross Out contest. people may have heard about. It's gone on for years and years. Yes. So, as well, I'm not primarily a Gross Out type of author, but
do I want to know?
Why not give it a stab?
What's involved? Do we want to know what's involved in a gross out contest?
you write the most, you just write a most disgusting or gross, depraved story you can many times,
so,
like I said.
So it's not like you're out doing like a Jackass episode where you're actually doing
bizarre.
Now some
people will bring props, and then some people will, there will be some antics sometimes. And some crowd participation, you know, it can get pretty wild from what I've gathered. So mine, I was sort of on the fence. I hadn't really, I had considered it, but I hadn't really put in any work into coming up with anything for that. But it was on the day of that I actually Saturday morning. I got up Saturday morning, and it was Friday. I've been up since 2:30, thanks to all of whatever it was that happened. But I got up Saturday morning early, and I wrote my entry for the Gross Out contest. And so that night, after the awards, the Gross Out contest was what closed out the night. And so
cool.
There were 12, I believe it was 12 entrants, maybe more, maybe 15. I don't remember precisely. There were several very interesting entries.
Nice.
Judith Sonnet, whom I met for the first time at this event, and I have a couple of her books now, but she was actually the winner of the Gross Out contest, and deservedly so. That was you had to be there. I'll just leave it at that. Speaking of Bridget Nelson, she actually won the second place slot. And,
nice.
And it was Russell Holbrook, who I'd met once before at one of the other Killer Cons a few years back. He won the third place slot. So, but that was
very nice.
Yeah, that was all deserved. They were all thoroughly entertaining in their performances. And some of, you know, it's judged often performance, a combination of content and performance as well. But was so congratulations to them on being some of the grossest people at the convention this particular
year. I'm glad, Bridget, and that's fun. That's great that you mentioned that, because she is going to be back for her encore. Of course, you remember the famous storm night where we lost our transformer.
Yes.
And it was down to just me. But I promised Bridget, like I said, to have an encore visit to make up for that. And so she is coming back on September 7th. So she will be back here. Yeah. And so that'll be something to talk about. And I mean, my God, they are the traveling triumvirate, Jeff Strand, Lynn Hansen, and Bridget Nelson. I mean, they have it, like, it seems to me like they're traveling as much as a rock band these days. Every time I look up, I mean, they're going somewhere around the country. I mean, they are out there. And so it's going to be kind of fun to catch up with her and find out about the adventures she's been having with Jeff and Lynn on these conventions. But KillerCon, city and venue, pass that along, because there's some folks might want to look this up.
Sure, that's in Round Rock, Texas, and that is at the Wingate by Wyndham Hotel and Convention Center.
Yeah, Wingates are nice. Those are usually pretty nice facilities. I've been to a few conventions at Wingates before, so that sounds cool. What large cities is that close to in Texas?
Austin,
I'm trying to get
Texas.
A picture in my head. It's near Austin.
Austin,
okay.
Texas. It's just right bordering Austin.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not too far of a drive from my old college stomping grounds up in Abilene. It was just a few hour drive from there. But yeah, for you, I mean, yeah, that's it's not terribly far, I guess, from where you're from. So that's
it's not that bad.
A little bit of a drive.
Yeah,
a little bit, but
no, it's not bad. Or as I had posted, yesterday I went down to the mass signing, and there were a number of us down there, and every book I brought,
I sold
everything I had. I left with nothing, which is, you know, that's a good problem to have.
What? Let me ask you. I'm stopping you there. My dream is to just have nothing but empty boxes at the end of a convention that I'm, you know, attending as like an author. What does it feel like to actually do that and have nothing to back up?
Oh, it's nice not having to carry
a
bunch of extra materials back.
Oh, man. That's the dream right there. I mean, even...
You know, it's been a while
since
I've done that, but...
Well, that's good. I'm glad that you got a good response at the signing. That's fantastic. But I did see where you sold out, so of course I had to ask you what that feels like to actually... 100% sell out every book you have. that's like every author's like dream usually. But especially
absolutely.
You know, at the end of a convention when you're lugging out that one box that you still have left, you're like, oh, you know. But that is awesome.
Oh, certainly could have gone worse.
Clayton says boxes empty and a bed full of cat girl pants. I have no
that's exactly right, Clayton.
Yes. But so that's cool, man. That's great. And now, were you on programming down there as well? What did you do? I mean, were you just mainly attending, or did you also participate on panels?
They didn't have me down for any programming. I participated in the Gross Out contest, and that was
cool.
Not this time around. I didn't do any of the programming.
Well, very cool. Very cool that you got to at least do the contest and the signing and everything else there. That's awesome. So you would recommend this one to horror, especially horror authors and splatterpunk, obviously.
Yes, definitely. Fan readers and writers of extreme horrors and splatterpunk and some of the darker stuff, I think, would have a good time here. A lot of networking opportunities, KillerCon, and it's sort of a smaller, a bit more intimate convention as well, and that's good in its way. There are so many different kinds of conventions that have their various uses, but KillerCon is a good convention for networking and getting to know everyone in the in the field and in your genre.
Yeah, those are the best. Yeah, we actually have the ability to actually have conversations and actually meet people, you know, and it's not, and then people are accessible. I mean, that's obviously
yes,
something near and dear to me, so that's great to hear that, you know, you've got another one there to recommend that has that kind of vibe. And certainly,
oh,
I've heard nothing but good things about it. So, and obviously, several of the people you've mentioned, obviously great, you know, great individuals. So it's being attended by some good folks. Now, as Maurice, he always has some of the flashiest attire of all the authors at an event. Was he still? He still have that flair?
he's still doing what he does.
Nice.
He's about the same.
Yeah, he's a sharp dressed guy at an event. I tell you, he has few rivals for sure. But that's awesome. That's awesome. So yeah, deep in the heart of Texas we go, and coming out of that though, I saw that you had more good reviews coming in on your current release. So that was cool to see.
I have gotten some more good reviews. For the most part, it seems to be going across in a positive way, be enjoying it. Hopefully I'll have some news on the next book here at some point. And then we can get the ball rolling on that. But yeah, so far so good as far as that goes.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I saw a couple of posts referencing some good recent reviews, and I was curious to see how that's going. And it's been about a month and a half since we really touched base. So time has flown with all the tumult I've had here. What are you doing as far as work in progress right now? How's things going there?
Well, I've had a lot of issues come down this year that have really slowed me down. So, but I was writing the third Black Carminia book, and so I'm on the home stretch of finishing that up. I had a few wrenches thrown into the spokes. People know that we had an incident in Denver that was very serious, and actually our vehicle was stolen from the premises of the hotel in a gated parking garage. Security camera. I didn't specifically explain what had happened the last time I spoke about that on the show, but that's what happened. But we had full comprehensive insurance, and so we now have a new vehicle. We just had to pay a deductible. But anyway, that was, you know, time that I would have been spending on my project, I had to devote to a lot of that and dealing with a lot of the legal matters and insurance matters and back and forth. And then someone dumped. I don't know how many people are aware, but the best we can figure, someone dumped a cat out here, and we were going to try to take care of her, try to get her spayed and get her shots, and we were just going to adopt her, but she ended up being pregnant, and so she had a whole litter of kittens. So now we've been trying to raise these kittens and to take care of her and to integrate them with the other cats that we already have. So we now have 11 cats as well. So we're trying to find
homes
for the kittens. Yes.
Still...
They're next weekend they will be, I think it's 8 weeks. So as you get closer to 12 weeks, then it will be time for them to leave. They will be becoming more independent and ready to find homes. And so we've already got a number of people who are interested. So it doesn't seem like it's going to be that difficult, but and of course,
okay,
we would be glad
good
to keep them, but that's 11 cats, so that's
so
a lot to keep up.
That would
up
be with awesome to come up with all 11 cats to Imaginarium next year. That would be exciting, because our hotel venue does allow four-legged family members to stay. So, yes, they do allow it. I take Vicky and Albie with me, so that would be something if you brought all 11 with you.
As it stands, we're not planning to bring all 11 at that time. We'll probably not have 11 by then, but we'll have probably about 5 cats, though. And we have the original 3, and then we're going to keep the cat, the mama cat, Cleo, and then we're going to keep one of the kittens. I think, and that will be 5, which is still more than we've ever had.
Oh,
but
that's awesome.
That's
Cleo, that's great. Enough. That's my grandmother's name on my mother's side. Her name was Cleo.
Really?
I love that name. Very fond of
it. Well, there were
positive connotations. Yes.
Well, it was sort of a double reference. Of course, there's, you know, the historical Cleopatra, and there's also the old 80s Heathcliff cartoon, if you ever remember watching that. It's Heathcliff and the Cadillac Cats. And so many people I tell about this don't remember, but Riff Raff and some of the cats, Riff Raff and Hector. And anyway, Cleo was the female cat, the tall, slender, sexy
That's
cat.
That's right.
Lived in the junkyard.
Yeah.
And so Carrie and I
That's
both
right.
remembered watching that cartoon back then. So yeah,
I did
so
too.
Of
I watched Heathcliff.
Well.
Yeah. There's a blast from the past. I have not talked about that show in ages. But, yeah, I remember that now. Yeah, that's cool. And I'm going to have to look around and see if I can pull up some of those old Heathcliff episodes just for fun now. Just jog my memory. But, yeah, that's – so, yeah,
but
you've had adventures.
And there have been all – yeah, it's been one thing after another – After another, and so yeah, it's slowed me down considerably. But I'm now getting back to the point where I'm pushing through, and you know, hopefully we'll have this one done and have the whole trilogy as it stands finished, and have some news on the second book and all of that here at some point. But yeah, it's been an interesting year.
Yeah, and interesting can be defined many ways.
Right, and there are so many other. Incidents that behind the scenes that I've not even talked about, but anyway,
so,
that's
I know how that goes. Believe me, that's my life in a nutshell. I've always got that kind of stuff going on. So yeah, I definitely understand. Yeah, Tommy, that's not fun. Yeah, because yeah, we've had a little bit of a run ourselves lately. Yeah, unfortunately with some. You know, some you know, tragic stuff that's happened to people in our worlds. But it's it's in that, and you know, but then our friend right before that, and it was just I know how things go sometimes. Yeah. Can't plan on some of that stuff. But great to hear that you are forging ahead, and I am now I know one book that'll go up your TBR list a little bit. But I'm halfway through the polishing pass on that New Hellscapes novel, so I'll give you
I know that you've been busy on the writing end as well.
Yeah, it's coming along great. The polishing phase has really been, it's been great. Been tightening up and just a few nips and tucks here and there, and yeah, I think it's coming together really, really nice. And I think that it may only be a couple more weeks to go before I can get through that, because that's a little bit faster of a pace. You know, I can get through that a little bit faster than obviously the first draft. But I'll keep you posted on that. I did manage to. I'd spoken about Wayne Barlow, the author. You know, God's Demon. You know, that I got the second
I
book.
I actually get around to reading that.
Ha! Cool. Yeah, so good. I'll get your thoughts. I finally picked up the second one in a first edition hardcover. I had a copy on Amazon for $14, and I was like, heck yeah, and I went ahead and scooped that up. So I did get a hardcover of that until I spoke with you of book two. But yeah, give me your impression of book one, because that's one that I just can't say enough about it as far as the visuals and everything.
Yeah, it was interesting, a lot of the mythos they sort of wove as far as that version of hell, and a lot of the various demons and such that are broken off into their own little realms and their own ways of doing things and their own without giving too much away to anyone who may want to read the book. But it was interesting. I enjoyed it.
It's an intense redemption story. That's what I found so interesting about it, because it's set in such a dark atmosphere, but it's a redemption story. I'm not going to give away spoilers, but other than, you know, that's kind of what the you know, that's what the plot is about. You know, you read it on a the back of the book cover. I mean, so they about a fallen angel, you know, that wants to, you know, work his way back, you know, to the good graces of heaven. And, yeah, put right in the midst of this just horrible, you know, and, you know, place. And but did you catch that the brick soul that's turned into a brick that he interacts with in that one scene is Boudica, the famous queen of the Iceni? Did you catch that?
I guess not. I do remember the interaction, but I didn't catch who she actually was. I might have to look at that again. But
I just love Boudica, so I picked up on that. There's some clues in there I picked up on like right away, but that's only because I'm a huge fan of that historical. But I thought, yeah, those little touches like that are what make that book so fun, because he's got all these little nuggets, little historical nuggets, kind of woven in, you know, in there. They're very subtle often. And so then he's got, of course, the big epic scale kind of visuals and whatnot. And if you're familiar with his artwork and you've, you know, had a chance to see his Hell artwork, I mean, it just really, you know, really, I mean, it fits that book just perfectly. I mean, it's exactly kind of what I was, you know, even imagining more or less, but even probably a little bit more abstract, you know, because he's got a pretty unique style as an artist. But That's one I hope that he continues. I'd love to see a third book, because, yeah, the second one really meshes well with book one and builds off of it really nicely. So, yeah, he's got a good thing going, but he's definitely not one that you can expect a book from every year. I mean, it takes a usual little gap in between.
Yeah, I believe it was bad. How many years?
Hopefully it's not.
Was it 15 or 20 years or something?
Yeah. And yes, Clayton is always mentioning the Niven and Purnell Hell books. I've got the book one, and I am going to check that out, Clayton. I am going to check that out because that looked really interesting. So, yeah, I will give you a report on that when I get a chance to read it. Reading wise, I'm finishing fiction wise. I'm reading finishing the Aberrant, the trilogy from Clive Barker, the book one, and then also the latest, not latest for the series, but the latest installment for me in the Meg series from Steve Alton. So those are my two fiction books for the moment.
I haven't gotten too deep into those. I remember you speaking about some of the Steve Alton books before. I've read the Meg, and I haven't gone any further than that yet, but I've got a note to look into some more of his works in time once I get a chance.
Fun stuff.
I've just finished reading Things Left. I've just finished Things Left Behind by Brian Keene and Mary St. Giovanni. That was their first collaborative effort.
Cool.
So, so that's a collection. Some of the stories are Brian Keene stories. Some of them are stories by Mary San Giovanni. And then I believe there are a couple of stories that they co-wrote. But that's been a nice volume, sort of the limited edition collectible that they both signed.
Nice.
But so I just now finished that, and I've just started Killer of Giants by Stephen Shrewsbury, which I actually got from him at Imaginarium the last time I saw him. So
I know that book very well. So I served as his editor in that one. But yeah, you're gonna love that one. That's a gem. I like that one a lot. And he's been getting some good response. He had to deal with some. Oh man, yeah. So it's one of those things that we authors have to be careful of. He got a little spat online with some wrestling fans, of all things, a little argument over, it was like over wrestling or something, and evidently these guys, you know, just got really angry at him, and so they decided just to be asses and leave like a couple bad reviews on Amazon. You know, they didn't read the book, obviously. They just decided to, you know, just get, they figured out he was an author, decided they'd just be jerks and get back at him by leaving these like bad reviews. And so, yeah, so poor Stephen had to put up with that out of the gate, and they're not legitimate, reviews whatsoever, you know, even you can see it, you know, not even verified purchases or anything like that. So it's a, yeah, it's clear that, you know, this is just a retaliatory thing. And yeah, so Steven had a little bit of a hole to dig out of there, because they were up there at least right from the coming out of the gate, you know. So, but now he's finally readers are finally starting to do all their postings and everything. So yeah, it's balanced out now, thank God. It's one of those little stories though about the life of authors that, you know, sometimes you got to be careful out there in the world of haters and trolls. But that book is really good, and he's going to continue. That's going to be a character that continues to future books. This one's a standalone, obviously, and that's what Steven tends to do with his Grias Legall novels too, which I might mention he has a new one that's going into onto the edit desk here at the beginning of September. So he has a new Grias novel coming up, but yeah, looking forward to that one, because Steven, you know, he writes the ancient world stuff so well, and he brings in a lot of horror elements, you know, to kind of put a little dark edge to it all. And really, you know, when we say that he's got a, like, kind of a Robert E. Howard style, that's definitely true, because I'm a big Robert E. Howard fan, and I can say that for sure. But his books definitely aren't gonna. You aren't going to be wanting for action and things like that. I mean, his books have all kinds of cool stuff going on, so very entertaining. So, yeah, I do hope you like that one, and especially the mammoth, if you've encountered the mammoth yet.
I haven't gotten that far into the book. They're talking about the mammoth some, but I've not gotten to the actual scene in question, though. Although I think Brian Keene mentioned something about it in the intro, so... there was that as well.
That's what Clayton needs, is to have, with his machine civilization, he needs to have some AI mammoths. that's clone mammoths that are driven by AI. But no, seriously, though, that the mammoth is a character in the book, like Stephen's book. It ends up being kind of a character, and it's just really cool how he works in that mammoth. And I think you're going to enjoy that. So... yeah, we had the awfulest time with the cover art, because we just couldn't get commissioned to, like, a couple different artists, and nobody could get the cover right. And finally, we got two brothers from Venezuela that were just fantastic, and got that cover together that you see now. And I just love how that turned out, because Steven wanted to get a very certain moment depicted on the cover. And we went through an odyssey to get it right. that was tough, but we got it. We got it. So.
Well, it's important to gain. I can be particular in that regard as well. But you know, people say don't judge a book by its cover, and despite people saying that, everyone does. I mean, people.
Oh yeah.
The cover and chapter one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, you got to get them out of the gates and have a really catchy cover. And today's design, it's just, you have to factor more into it than you did in the past because of thumbnails. So not only do you have to have a cover that's good,
right,
but it also has to work in a small size, like as a thumbnail. I mean, that's a whole other layer to the design that for today's authors. It makes it even more complicated. So it's definitely an important part of the process for sure, but yeah, you've got great covers. I mean, I love the cover on your book one here that you got out right now. That is so nice.
Oh yeah.
Mhm. Yeah, it's a sharp one. And Clayton seconds that. He says a good cover designer and copy editor are worth their weight in gold. So.
Oh,
yeah, I would have to say, yeah, it's definitely important to say the least. But that's cool. I'm glad you're reading some new shrews. So that'll be helpful. By the time you finish that, probably you'll have a Hellscapes novel to show you that's all shiny and new.
Excellent.
Oh dear, but. Yeah, I'll keep keep at it. I've been listening to lots of good metal as my soundtrack while working on that one. So you wouldn't be disappointed with all my selections there. Yeah, it's good stuff. But how's the rest of your world going at the moment beyond the book world? Are you enjoying some good music at least, or is it getting a little bit calmer for you? How's things going?
Well, it's still pretty hectic, but not in a bad way. It's just I'm staying busy. But I listen to music and read every day in between wherever I can.
You have more travels coming up? We have some new, some more.
I have some local
conventions
events.
Or signings.
I have a signing at the local independent bookstore this weekend on Saturday, Bookish. So I'll be up there Saturday afternoon. So anyone in the Fort Smith River Valley area wants to come up and snag a copy of the new book or any past releases, I'll have all of that with me. Every year I do a signing at the library, so I'll have one of those in October. And I have one con that's in September, and that'll be it.
So three more on the map.
Mm-hmm. Likely I'll just go into hibernation and try to get some more writing done.
Surrounded by cats.
So.
Well, I'm glad. Yeah, that's cool that you're going to have a hometown signing, though. Because those are always like a little extra fun and relaxing, because you're on your home turf, and you end up seeing a lot of folks you want to see.
I only have to drive about 20 minutes, and I'm there, and so that's a little different from.
You don't have
7 hours or 10 hours or
7 hours
and or
hotels,
whatever
and gas
it is.
And all the other fun stuff, because I know the gas factor is becoming more of a challenge these days, especially for the long distance stuff. That'll be nice to do a hometown gig,
It'll be convenient.
Like you said, winter, good time to
easy.
Bunker in and hibernate and get some more writing done.
And we'll have the holiday months and all of that coming at us. So, you have anything in the plans for after you finish up the Hellscapes novel? Any ideas?
Teetering between what I'm going to do. It's either going to be the sixth book in the Rising Dawn saga, or it's going to be first book of a duology with Raiden Valkyrie. That's kind of a continuum of some things that were in the Dark Sun Dawn trilogy, the one with Heart of a Lion and all that, but kind of builds off some elements that were in there. And there are going to be a couple of novellas that kind of fill in the gap, but this duology takes place a little bit after those events. And I've been burning to do that story, because I've got it really well, in my mind, it's got it really visualized right now. And so I'm thinking I might tackle that, because those books are a little bit smaller than the Rising Dawn Saga one. So I may do the book one of that and then do the book six of the Dawn Saga. But those will be the next projects, I'm pretty sure. Because right now I'm just waiting for stuff to get edited. I've got, book five of the Dawn Saga, book four of Fires in Eden, book two of the Faraway Saga. I'm imminently going to have this new Hellscapes book. And I did get back, that new novella not too long ago. And so that'll be able to be released this fall. But the pipeline, I've got literally, four finished novels, essentially. As soon as I polish this one up, I'll have four that are just done, as far as, waiting for the editing. And that is not fun. But I'm eager to get them out. So it's kind of like me. I'm just like, because I understand the editing process. So I know I can't just pressure to do, have them rush through. I know they're going to take some time, but at the same time, I'm itching to get them out too. I've kind of been catch 22.
I understand. But you do have a lot of material.
Clayton says he don't know that feeling at all. Cough. Yeah, he knows what I'm talking about there. And it looks like Clayton recently discovered Sabaton, great history metal. Yes. Yeah, their albums are just historical delights. He said they were in Cincy a few weeks ago, but the tickets started at $120 and went up from there. That is crazy. Yeah, that's a little much.
Well,
that's a little much. Yeah, Five Finger Death Punch is coming to Rupp Arena in November, and I think they're about $65 for a big arena show, so I might have to pick that up. And then Electric Callboy, which is, I think, one of the more interesting, crazy bands out there. They're from Germany, but they're hitting a club in Louisville, but those are only like $25. That's November. So, yeah, there's a couple shows I might have to see, but. Yeah, $120. Yeah, that's a little steep. I'm with you, Clayton. That's a little steep for a show. But
I haven't been to a concert in a while. May have been early this year. I guess when the COVID was still somewhat, but we're coming out of that experience. And the last three concerts I bought tickets to. The concert was canceled, and I had to get the tickets refunded, and that was three times in a row. So now that it's late 2022, maybe I would have a bit better luck. I may give it another shot when someone worthwhile comes around.
Yeah, I think you're going to be more stable now as far as the shows. I think you're probably, who knows, though? I mean, stuff always happens in waves, it seems, but I think you're going to be in general okay because – all the bands are releasing new albums now, so they're all intending to tour. I mean, the release schedule from here through November is pretty thick, and I mean, you've got a new Megadeth album just right around the corner here, too. New King's X, new Queensryche, new Machine Head, new Slipknot, new Disturbed. I mean, there's just like a slew of bands putting stuff out, so I think everybody's intending to be out there touring, so... That should bode well, but as we've seen you never can predict anything anymore. So who knows? But I think the odds are better that the shows will actually happen. They better because I haven't been to a concert since February of 2020, and that was Kiss, and that was right before. Everything broke out literally weeks before everything just hit full stride. And so that was the last arena concert that I've seen. And so, yeah, I'm dying to see a real show, a big show again. So I'm going to have to check out the Five Finger Death Punch guys because they do put on a really good theatrical show with pyro and lots of energy and tons of, just a real high-octane kind of set. So. And like I think I mentioned it to you before, but the bass player Chris Kale, he and I used to do all ages shows at a Shriners Temple here in Lexington back in the late 90s, the early 2000s. We used to do, promote. He had a hardcore metal band, and he was one of the guys I would work with to put on like all ages metal shows back in that time. We'd collaborate and get PA and promote it and work together on everything and set up a little concerts every so often at this place called the Alika Temple. It was a Shriners place. And he's gone on to become the bassist for Five Finger Death Punch, which is pretty awesome. So that is a lot of fun. So I'm hoping, I've exchanged a few messages with them over the years. I'm hoping maybe they come into Lexington, I might be able to actually catch up with them in person. But I know how hard that is. That's for a touring band, but not easy to have much control over your schedule. I mean, they pretty much those road managers and managers, they got them on a pretty tight itinerary when they're hitting arena after arena. But let's see. Kit Clayton chimed in. He says Fake Quiet Riot
Fake
in
Quiet
Zeno,
Riot,
Ohio, because she and maybe it's his wife. His wife went to Fake Quiet Riot in Zeno, Ohio, because she and Rudy Sarzo were friends. Well, Rudy is in the band now, and I saw that. And but it's kind of strange, Quiet Riot now because you know, they don't have, you know, three of the guys in the mental health lineup are not in the band now. And obviously Kevin and Frankie passed, and then Carlos Cavazo was pretty much, he's pretty much a boy, I can tell he's a recluse now, because, yeah, he's not playing with anybody right now at the moment that I've heard of, which is a shame because he's phenomenal. And he actually plays, he played really well on that last Rat studio album. But yeah, Sarzo's a nice guy. That's kind of an anecdote, but I actually did in the late 90s when I was doing all that all ages shows, I was helping clubs arrange shows as well. And I helped book a Quiet Riot show in the late 90s with the original Mental Health lineup in Richmond, Kentucky. And it was awesome because I did get to meet all of them, Kevin DeBro, Frankie Benali, Rudy Sarzo, and Carlos Cavazo. They were super cool. And I'll never forget, though, I had to go through hell and high water to make sure I got Peach Snapple and Werner's Ginger Ale. So every time Frankie liked Werner's Ginger Ale. And so every time I see Werner's Ginger Ale or Peach Snapple, I think of Quiet Riot to this day. Because we had to specifically find it, and nothing else was acceptable on the rider. That was an absolute. it was that album that came out at the late 90s. It was part re-recorded like hits, and then the other half of it was new songs. And it was a really good show. I mean, they were really good. It was, they had reunited for that, and it was the original. Not original, because, he goes back to, the version that had Randy Rhoads in the band.
Yes,
back
yeah.
in the day.
Yeah, that's right.
But everybody thinks of the Mental Health lineup, obviously, with Quiet Riot. Although there is some good stuff on the first two albums, the ones that were done with Randy Rhoads. And they're hard to find. But Mental Health is not.
Not everyone thinks about that Randy Rhoads was in Quiet Riot. Everyone, thinks of his Aussie years. But, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, nope. Yeah, that's where he was. They were good. I mean, they weren't – I do think that, obviously Mental Health, they really hit stride. But that was a fun show. And they were nice guys. I really got along with them. Kevin was really nice, and Carlos was cool, and Frankie Benali is really cool. So I'm so glad. Yeah, and the two of them are, like I said, are past. So I'm really happy I did get a chance to actually meet them. Yeah, their last album wasn't too bad. I mean, like I do understand where Clayton's coming from with so few original members, but yeah, they still put out some good stuff. Some good stuff, and. He said that, Clayton does have some cool comments. He said, like my wife's family, Frankie, he's speaking about, he's speaking about Rudy Sarzo, maybe. His family were refugees from communism. They met during her first lymphoma. Wow. Oh, no, he may be talking about Frankie then, because Frankie's also a business manager and quite a gentleman. Yeah, because Frankie had a fight with cancer. That's what his thing was. Mm-hmm. Okay, he was talking about Rudy. Okay, so he's talking about Rudy in regards to his family being refugees in communism and met during her first lymphoma. But he says Frankie was also a business manager and quite a gentleman. Yes, I can vouch for that. Yeah, they were not hard to deal with. But most bands weren't. I had good experiences with Overkill, Flotsam and Jetsam, Nevermore. Poor old Dane was such a cool guy. God, it killed me when he passed, because he was just such a down to earth guy. I had a real good visit with him, and we had a lot of good bands. Jackal was a little difficult. We had Jackal one time.
I could kind of see that.
Bigger. Yeah, Jesse James Dupree thought he was a little bigger than he was. I guess, but it was a little bit of an adventure. Still like the show, and it didn't ruin my enjoyment of some of their stuff, but I just want a good, laid-back rock kind of vibe. But it's they were definitely the one that was tougher to deal with. And then the one that I'm just so sad about is we had Amon Amarth booked, and they had to cancel at the last minute. no, because I would have had a chance to hang out with those guys relatively early, because that would be about 2000, so that about that point in their career. But the good news was, in the package I got from the promoter, they did send every copy of their albums up to that point, so I got a bunch of free Imada Mark CDs. That was cool. But yeah, it's sometimes it's an adventure putting on a national act or so. But you know, you can go through a lot of hoops. But yeah, I have fond memories of a lot of the classic bands that from metal that we dealt with, at least. Yeah, Overkill and like I said, Flotsam and Nevermore, and that was during a time when metal was having a little bit of struggle, maybe. It wasn't, things weren't back then, as it was a bit of a lull, just coming off that mid-90s period. And it was really, really interesting, because a lot of the albums from those years that I got to meet the bands and all, they're not the albums that a lot of the fans will rank high on the discographies. So it's kind of interesting. It was a good time. Yeah, I just wish I could have met a few more. And that's when we had, I don't know if you knew this, but I actually had a almost like a little mini South by Southwest kind of convention in Lexington around the same time as well, called the Midwest Entertainment Industry Conference. And we had David Carradine, one of our guests of honor one year. And along with him, we had Kramer. We had Eddie Kramer. And of course, he's known for his work with oodles of bands, the Kiss and all kinds of folks, Hendrix, everybody. And but he brought a full gallery of his personal photographs to the event, and my mom and him just hit it off famously. He and my mom just were like buddies. It was so funny. And I was just sitting back here thinking, here's the producer of some of Kiss's biggest albums, and he's just chatting away and laughing with my mom, just so cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
But I got a little bit of a music tangent there, but. So, Clayton asked real quick. He asked, "Did I do any work for concerts at A1A in Lexington? We went several shows there." Local band, regional bands, yes. I did get bands that I kind of worked with and associated with gigs there, but they pretty much had their own in-house booking. So if a national act came in, they largely did their own thing. So that was, I did a lot of, we did do quite a few shows with some of the bands that I was buddies with or helping manage and whatnot back in my music days. Probably about the same time you were drumming, Tommy. Probably, maybe somewhere around there. But yeah, those are good times.
Well, let's see. That would have been around 2000 to 2002, I believe.
Yeah, late 90s to early 2000s. Yeah.
Or actually, yeah, I'm thinking, yeah, actually, yeah, 99 to, it's been a while, sometime around then. I would have to look back and review what all,
it's kind of eerie how, once you start talking about some of the stuff, though, everything just kind of floods back in your memory,
I have to pinpoint which year I did what and what, all of that.
Kind of like the time, I feel so stupid about this, but I was telling a friend a few years back, and I was like, we saw the Cross Purposes Black Sabbath tour, and I love Tony Martin's years, and I'm always an advocate for his time in Black Sabbath, because it's criminally underrated. Some of Tony Iommi's best riff work are on some of those albums, and just absolutely great stuff. And I saw them in Dallas, and I had forgotten that the other band on that bill was Motorhead. And I was like, yes, I did see Motorhead. I've just forgotten, because it's been a few years. It was 1994 or 5 or so. And so I would guess that Motorhead would be on the Sacrifice tour. And then Black Sabbath.
That's an excellent album, too. So.
Cross Purposes. And then the first band was Morbid Angel. They were the early band.
Oh, yeah. I've seen them before as well. Yes.
But it's a co-headlining. And so I realized, I was like, yeah, I did. And then everything flooded back, and I remembered, everything about Motorhead. And I was like, yeah, I did see Motorhead. Yeah, but I know I know how it is. Sometimes you just forget, man, because you just saw so much stuff. And but yeah, about I was like, oh man, I can't believe I forgot I saw Motorhead. But because it was like
at the
time,
discover that memory buried, and you can try to salvage what you can of it and try to remember what what you saw and experienced during that time.
Well, see, here's the weird thing. I thought they were really cool at that time, and you know, but I wasn't like buying their albums in droves or anything like that. The funny thing is, in the 2000s is when I was like, oh yeah, I'm really getting it, you know, the Motorhead, the whole vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back and I did get all their albums then. So it's just, I think it was just a factor of not being heavily into the band at that time that buried it somehow in my memory.
Mm-hmm.
But later, you know, of course I got the whole discography and just, you know, loved the band. And, yeah, I could definitely talk about them for an entire episode. I mean, they get so many good albums, but, yeah, it's funny how your mind works. You forget a lot of stuff. Oh, but
I think
now you've got to hear some stories that you've never known about me, Tommy.
Well, it was good to drop in, but I think I may have to drop out because.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been, like I said, it's been hectic, and I'm probably going to have to step out, but I'll catch the rest of the show a bit later, and it was good to drop in, chit chat for a while, and any news on Imaginarium Year 10, I would love to hear about, or to coming back out there and doing it all over again for the 10th time in a row.
But it'll be a little calmer, I promise.
I plan to
take it easy this year. Oh, man. But, yeah, we'll have some fun, man. But you take care, and thank you so much for calling, and appreciate it. Had a great chat. This was actually a blast.
Excellent, yeah. It's been good. It's been fun.
Take care, Tommy.
I'll talk to you later. Look forward to
seeing
what you've got in the works. All right.
You got it. Bye-bye. And, that was awesome. Tommy B. Smith. Yeah, just fantastic author. Definitely a friend, a colleague, great individual. I just love the guy, respect him, and go buy his books like now. Yeah, because he's a great writer. And I have another extremely talented writer who's about to join me, and timing is just right, and hopefully he'll be able to hang on with me and cruise to the end of the show here. But this is the one, the only, the man himself, Clayton Barnett, on the Star Chamber Show. There you are.
This show certainly went off on an interesting tangent.
It did. Well, Tommy and I, we are known to do that once in a while.
When you mentioned Tommy Iommi from Black Sabbath, I think the first album I got from them was Mob Rules when I was in junior high school.
Sweet.
So that's probably it's probably before your parents were born.
No, not at all. That's the second to the Dio years.
Right.
Yeah, that would put you at about 1981, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm thinking
and because my first, I also went back, and I honestly forget the name of the album, but it's the ones with the angels smoking on the cover.
Oh, Heaven and Hell, one of my favorite
metal
albums of all time. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And my favorite Dio sung albums of all time. Yeah, if you count Dio with Rainbow solo and Black Sabbath, yeah, Heaven and Hell would be in the top, like, probably three of mine picks. I mean, it's a... Oh yeah, that's an amazing album, and the provocative cover didn't hurt it. helped sell that album.
As Tommy said, I mean, and as I've said before, the one time I was on your show, that everybody judges a book by its cover, and everybody back then, at least you had an album cover that was about a foot by a foot, and then you had CD covers, and then now album covers are exactly like book covers, and as you said, that they're a thumbnail going by in a split second.
Yep, that's the challenge.
Cool.
So
what used to be
really
extravagant and very detailed artwork is now just some slapdash thing, and I hope somebody remembers who our band is.
Yep, That's true, unfortunately. But the funny thing is, vinyl has roared back since about 2010. It had a weird vinyl resurgence the last 10, 15 years. And so the funny thing is, yeah, you're starting to see some really good artwork creeping back because of the vinyl format getting popular again. So I guess what comes around goes around. But it's nice.
Well, maybe
it's
that
nice
means
to see because,
maybe in a few years, instead of my 6x9 book covers, I'll be doing something like 12x18.
Oh, man. That'd be a big book. Oh, I wouldn't want to lug those around to conference.
I know, but you know, a man can dream nonetheless.
Yeah. No, your covers
it's
are
similar
sharp.
To back
I mean,
in.
Back
in the early part of
this. Germany, it's fantastic.
When I had just finished Obligations of Rank and the whole Ukraine fiasco was starting and the German economy was beginning to inflate. And so that's when in 6 weeks I wrote Texas Naval Affair and got that under your nose while sending the idea off to Claudia. And I, since then, I've been just busy in other projects and Imaginarium and some local things where a comic book store is going to be physically hosting my books. And I reached out to her just a week ago, and that's one of the things I said in the chat room, is that she and her 2-year-old kids sneak into the woods outside of their farm at night because it's illegal to harvest firewood, but they do it anyway because they think they're going to freeze to death this winter. I said, you know, for F's sake, I can put you up in my damn basement. And she said none of her family have the jab, so they can't get on an airplane.
Oh, yeah, they were trapped. Yeah.
So they're absolutely screwed. And so that's why I took what Joe Eisenberg had told me first at Imaginarium, where you kind of saw we had our own little corner there.
Oh, yeah.
And then because I mentioned in passing that I was stuck with my Russia-Canada book, and I said, but I have these other ideas about the rest of the Hartman Imperial family. And he just looked over the rim of his glasses and said, so why aren't you writing them?
Mm-hmm.
And then about 10 days ago, when I realized that my cover designer was in such a state, I went, son of a bitch, Joe was right. Because this is holding me back, and this is holding people that need my help back. And that's when, as you mentioned, you see on Gab that I've been, you know, I just broke the 10,000-word barrier today, and that's today is day 8 of work. And I don't even know where the whole story's going yet, but it's something that I know I can finish in probably 6 more weeks.
Yeah,
and so
checking.
That will at least be, you know, 300 euros for her that maybe they can afford candles.
Yeah, that's awful. Yeah, because I know the winter's going to be rough from what I've seen and read.
Yeah,
but,
because her farm is right at the base of the Harz Mountains, and when that east wind comes down, apparently it's pretty effing cold. And with fuel and electricity prices up over 300%, that's why they're stealing sticks and twigs from the forest. I mean, this is a first world country. This is the German European economic powerhouse, and you have women and children stealing sticks.
Yeah, it's crazy.
As bad as fucked ourselves in America, I just can't believe what they've done to themselves there.
Yeah, I want to say, you're not exaggerating. I mean, that's exactly what's happening. But hopefully, like I said, you know, that'll help a little bit with their situation. But you've been rolling. I mean, because I've been every time I look up, you're adding another few thousand words up on your counts.
And that was the only thing that stopped me was Tuesday when I was really feeling under the weather. But today I got another, I think, 1,300 words written and posted about 500 of it. So I'm getting back on track, and I almost have a glimpse of – because before it was just a sort of a writing exercise. Like, you know, Joe Eisenberg was right. I need to start doing something. And that was one of the great strengths of Imaginarium is meeting people like that I've stayed in touch with and can guide me and mentor me. And I'm hoping to do that at other cons like LibertyCon, which I was successfully able to get a ticket for.
Nice. All right. Yeah, Liberty Con will be a good spot for you. And did you ever hear back from that panelist thing? Because I know on the air with last week, I guess it was Deep South Con, you were applying to be a panelist. Did that work out?
I'm still looking into that because I simply, honestly, have been so busy writing this other story that I haven't had a chance. I went to their website. It takes you to Google Documents, and you can fill out the information. And I just haven't gotten that far because I have an idea of putting together a panel for Imaginarium. Well, that's a year from now. And I don't like to walk into a panel environment where I'm trying to pull it out of my butt. I want to be as absolutely professional as possible because I am my own brand, just like you are to most extents. And if people walk out of the panel going, that was retarded, that guy's an idiot, well, then they're going to tell their friends online and offline, and that just cost me 200 or 300 books in sales. So I'm not ruling it out, but I'm still sneaking up on it.
Gotcha. Yeah, definitely get your stuff in early on Imaginarium because earlier is better in general because as far as once the programming starts rolling, it's stuff that's in the front of the line. Tends to it's a little easier to respond to that when none of the slots have been filled yet. So
yeah, I mean the panel because this is really the first time I've seen multi-member panels like this. Things generally are not done that way at anime cons, which is most of what I've gone to before.
Right.
And in a couple of cases, it worked. In fact, that writing Militaria panel was far and away the best one I attended, and I learned a lot there. And from out
you
the audience,
William
was able
Joseph,
to contribute a little bit.
You and William Joseph Roberts, I remember that's where you got to meet him, I think, so.
Yeah,
he's superb.
And then another one on Sunday morning, right before I left, was religion and writing. And I thought, I can make this better. No slam on the panelists there. I just know that I can. And so that's one of the things I'm thinking on doing. I would not, after seeing that writing Militaria panel, I would not presume to step into their shoes because I'd make myself look like an idiot. But there is one other idea about essentially what I have, and to some degree what some of your books are as well, is building a cohesive future. Not just writing one or two books here, one or two books there, but building something that is seamlessly integrated over 5 books, 20 books, 50 books. Because that, to me, takes a lot. I guess most people would do it with Excel spreadsheets these days. Since I come from a design engineering background, I just have this extremely complex web in my head, and I just see it. And occasionally I'll have to go back and look at my notes, but I figure if I can bring that to some kind of panel where, as a writer, you don't have to rebuild a world from scratch every single time. You can jump back in history 20 years, but you can still go back to that well. You can jump forward 3 generations. But
bingo.
There was a guy who's been reading my stuff on the science fiction forum on Gab. I forget. I think it's Captain V or something like that. And he had just finished Crosses and Double Crosses and went, I had no freaking idea that Clive Barrett is Aurelia's great-grandfather, the guy who murdered 250,000 people in Texas in XCOM. And I said, that's when I forwarded him a partial family tree. And I said, this stretches over 4 generations. And so he immediately wrote back, I'm buying Princess Crusade.
Nice.
So to me, that's one of the tremendous strengths of having this web, because if a reader pulls on one string and suddenly all these other bells ring and they like that one string, then, well, why don't I look at that one? Why don't I go look at this one? And you, it's not really a matter of getting them hooked. It's just, to me, it's like when I put pictures and maps in the front of my books, is I want to provide the resources for the reader to have. And if they use it, great. They don't, I don't care, but it's my responsibility. And so totally by accident, this guy realized that this you know, story about these two friends, one of whom is an extremely dangerous Army commander, tooling around in Maine, is the great-granddaughter of one of history's greatest murderers. And that has generated sales for me. Because, you're offering that. So I'm thinking of doing a panel on those kind of interconnections.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
But, I've not fleshed it out yet.
Yeah, because you've definitely, you know, built a thorough world in history. I mean, probably when you had a decade or two, you probably have something as deep and broad as Tolkien.
One of the things I can't do is I can't spend 30 pages describing a leaf.
But I'm just speaking in terms of, you know, just having a multi-generational kind of, you know, vast, you know, story like that. I mean, it's definitely impressive.
Yeah, I'm working on it because, and by doing this at Mr. Eisenberg's prompting, by doing this short, which is going to become at least a novella, not its own novel, is now I am re-engaging, because this is set in Maine, the Northern Federation, I'm re-engaging with the politics of Canada. And that means already in my subconscious mind, I'm re-engaging with what is happening between not just Canada, Maine, and the Imperium, but between Canada and Russia. And that will drag me back into that story. I will have no choice.
Yeah.
And so quite potentially, I could be shoving two books that need copy editing under your nose in the next 3 months.
Okay. Well, I love working.
I'm sure you're not going to object.
Well, no, because I enjoy your stories. I mean, they're really a pleasure to work with, and you do deliver clean copy so that, you know, I can actually look on the really, really refinement level without having to fix major repair job kind of mode.
I know I still have problem with commas, and I think I always will. That doesn't seem to be going away. But you don't hand somebody a turd and say, coat this with silver.
But sometimes it's a matter of just getting the right beats and stuff. But that's good news. I'm excited. And I just realized that this is the second straight week that Joe Eisenberg has gotten shout outs on the show. So I'm going to get him booked on the show so
he's scruffy looking as all get out, but he's extremely articulate and amazingly clever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was fun, but we'll have to tell him this is the second week that he's gotten time on the Star Chamber show. 2 week streak. This may be a new thing. We'll have to mention him at least once a week. It'll be a new tradition. But
it would be easy for him to keep up for an hour and a half. He would have no trouble doing that.
Oh, no. Yeah. This year at Imaginarium is actually his second year. So yeah, he's a veteran now at the convention. So, but he's a lot of fun. Yeah, I had fun. I got to be on a cryptocurrency panel with him during that weekend, and it was Daniel Dark, myself, and Joe, and we had a hell of a good discussion. I mean, we could have talked probably for 2 hours, you know, if we had the time. But it ended up being a really good one. He's a lot of fun to have on a panel too. I enjoyed being. He was the moderator on that one, but
he was a little bit off to the side on the writing Militaria panel, but his contributions were few, but they were very important because the man knows his material.
Yeah, no, he's got a sharp mind for sure. But glad you guys got to meet in person. Always. I think that's always a cool thing about this is that, when you know somebody online for a while and you finally get to meet them face to face. Well, that was kind of like with you and me as well. So the first time I saw you in person. So, but that's,
the very first words out of your mouth when I was going to Sandy Linder's panel. And the first thing you said to me in person was, "Oh my God."
Yeah. Well, I was like, I knew who it was as soon as I turned. I knew who it was. I mean, and you got to remember, I have not seen that many photos of you. Just had a couple.
That's why I figure I must have scared you badly.
No. Yeah, there's some in the writing world that probably fit that description better, but not you.
Well, I'll try harder next time. Looks like we're down to the last 5 minutes. This is your show,
yeah.
So I'm going to bow out and let you wrap up and promote the Imaginarium 10.
Well, before you get off the phone line, tell everybody how they can find you and your books, because you got quite a few out now on Amazon.
Yeah, I'm on Amazon, both in physical and Kindle e-format. I am on Smashwords, and they're all electronic formats, even down to PDF. Most of my ebook formats are extremely inexpensive, 99 cents, $1.99. On Smashwords, my first two novels, Fourth Law and Echoes, are actually free to the reader. And if you want to follow along and actually watch stories be born and grow, I try to update my blog, www.machciv.com, at least every other day. Recently, it's been every day. And sometimes I'm just making comments about ideas, but generally I'm playing with ideas that in five cases later turned into a novel. So it's, you watch
nice.
The genesis of a book being born.
That's awesome. Well, thanks for calling, my friend. And yeah, definitely hope you feel better and get back to your word count groove.
I'm gonna try to. All right, you can take us out. Good luck, Stephen.
All right, take care. Well, that was Clayton Barnett, folks. Yes, a great call. Had two excellent conversations tonight, and like I said, open mic nights or open line nights, we'll talk about anything, and we did tonight. Especially during the conversation with Tommy B. Smith, and definitely enjoyed getting the updates from Clayton. Got to give the awesome Joe Eisenberg, another shout out, always worth it. And been a really fun show. Really enjoyed it. We will have guests the next several weeks. Got some good ones coming up. I mentioned earlier that Bridget Nelson will be back on the 7th. Next week, we'll have John B. Pica coming in to visit. So haven't had him in a while. That'll be a fun show. Great personality, great guy. And, as we get ready for the March to Imaginarium 2023, and don't forget, don't miss out on the discounts and securing your expo space. You want to be a vendor exhibitor, discounts for all space now, along with discounts on extra vendor badges. And then we have discounts on full weekend event tickets, and definitely take advantage of that, because we sold out all space in Maiden Expo Hall and Creative Alley last year, so you don't want to wait on that. Might as well take the savings now. And then, of course, we have sponsorships available. The film festival is open for submissions, and our guest applications are open for those wanting to be panelists and spotlighted guests. And so, yeah, let's get the ball rolling, and let's start a big avalanche heading toward Imaginarium 2023. It turns out to be, by far the best yet, with the most content and opportunities for all of you. So thank you so much for joining me tonight. I had to go solo, but the time flew by. I really enjoyed it very much. Two great calls, and to be joining you all next week on Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. John B. Pica is the guest. So, yes, I don't have anybody to turn it over to sign off, so I will just have to say from me, Stephen Zimmer, thank you for listening. Join us next week, and thanks for listening to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. Until next week, take care.